Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 13, The Dynasty of Maharaj Nimi, Text Number 4. Shishya Vyati Kramam Viksha Tam Niravart Yatago Guru Ashapat Patatad Deho Nime Pandita Manina. Translation, there's no purport. After completing the sacrificial performance for King Indra, the spiritual master Vashistha returned and found that his disciple Maharaj Nimi had disobeyed his instructions. Thus Vashistha cursed him, saying, "May the material body of Nimi, who considers himself learned, immediately fall." Text 5. Nimi pratitado shapam guruve dharma vartine tavapi patitadeho loba dharmam ajanata. For unnecessarily, translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. For unnecessarily cursing him when he had committed no offense, Maharaj Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. For the sake of getting contributions from the King of Heaven, he said, "You have lost your religious intelligence, therefore I pronounce this curse, that your body also will fall." Purport. The religious principle for a Brahmin is that he should not be greedy at all. In this case, however, the sake of more lucrative remunerations from the King of Heaven, Vashistha neglected Maharaj Nimi's request on this planet, and when Nimi performed the sacrifices with other priests, Vashistha unnecessarily cursed him. But when it is affected by contaminated activities, his power, material or spiritual, reduces. Although Vashistha was the spiritual master of Maharaj Nimi, because of his greed, he became fallen. Just brief comments, because interesting story. It's almost like the Daksha Jugga, cursing and counter-cursing. And these are such elevated personalities. In the story of Vashistha Muni, we have the example when Vishwamrita Muni was a king, he came to Vashistha Muni's hermitage. And Vashistha Muni was living just with a few sages and a cow and a hermitage. And Vishwamrita, he was such a powerful personality on this earth, he had millions of warriors with him who had gone around the earth, conquering the earth. And there was Vashistha Muni, a poor Brahmin, and he said hello, hosted him, and then said, "Well, can I give you some prasad?" So Vishwamrita Muni was thinking, "Give me some prasad. I mean, maybe you have a pat of butter, but it's not going to be very much for feeding me, what to speak of anyone else." But Vishwamrita Muni said, "Don't worry about it. Just have all your soldiers sit down in rows, and I'll feed all of you." So they sat down in rows, and because that cow that Vishwamrita Muni had was a Kamadhenu cow, from his udder manifested unlimited plates made of gold and silver. Then Vashistha Muni said, "Ask your soldiers whatever they like they could have." So they were imagining pakoras and samosas and sweet rice and curd sabjis and pizza and ice cream, everything. And from the Kamadhenu cow, everything came. Then, for entertainment, the Kamadhu cow called for the apsaras from the heavenly planets, and they came dancing to entertain all his soldiers. Previously, when he was leaving, Vashishtha Muni asked the king if he wanted anything. The king said, oh no, it's all right. Because he was thinking, he's such a poor Brahmin, what could he give me? But then after seeing the opulence of this Kamudenu cow, before he was leaving, he said, well, maybe you can give me one little thing. I just need one cow from you, namely that cow. But Vashishtha Muni said, well, I'm a little attached to the cow because with the cow I get the ghee for the sacrifice. And I mean, myself and the cow, we have a very special relationship. But Vishramita Muni said, no, I want that cow, and either you're going to give it to me or I'm going to take it. So Vashishtha Muni said, well, what can I do? And the cow was saying, don't give me away. I don't want to go with these people. But he said, what can I do? They're going to take you anyhow. So they dragged the cow away. And the cow broke out of the hands of the soldiers, fled back to Vashishtha Muni and asked Vashishtha Muni to protect him. So Vashishtha Muni said, all right, from your udders manifest the Ribhu soldiers and slaughter the soldiers of Vishwamrita. So from his udder came unlimited Ribhu soldiers, and they completely annihilated the army of Vishishtha Muni, of Vishwamrita Muni. The only one left was Vishwamrita Muni, who was a little depressed at this time. So he thought, what is the power of a Kshatriya? If I can become a Brahmin, then maybe I'll have some power. That's when he went through his austerity. First he went through some austerity of fasting, living on air for some months. He got a little power. He got some weapons from the demigods. He got Agni Shastra, Varuna Shastra, all these different Shastras. He came back to the hermitage of Vashishtha Muni, took his weapons, and threw them on the hermitage. And the hermitage just caught on, you know, just was disappeared, practically speaking. Then Vashishtha Muni came out, and he said, well, all right, what do you want? He said, I want your cow. And he said, no, we're not going to give you the cow. So then he threw the weapons on Vashishtha Muni. Vashishtha Muni took up his danda, and all the weapons got absorbed in his danda. A little discouraging for Vishwamrita. I mean, after all, if you lived on air for a few months, you think you probably want to get something out of it. He couldn't even get a cow. Then he was really determined to go through some austerity. And so that's when he did his famous austerity of meditating for 60,000 years to become a Brahmin. I mean, ISKCON, just think how merciful the spiritual masters are. You can become a Brahmin after a year. But he had to wait for 60,000 years. He was trying to become a Brahmin. But of course, Indra, as usual, became disturbed, thinking that why is this person meditating so hard? He probably wants to take over my position. Let me send my apsara. So he sent one of his apsaras. And just by hearing the tinkling of the bells, you can imagine sitting there meditating for 60,000 years, probably on Brahman, gets a little boring, waiting to become a Brahmin. So he was thinking, let me just take a peek, see who's wearing the ankle bells. Maybe I know her. I'm not going to do anything. Just a peek, and I'll go back to my meditations. Getting a little boring here anyhow. So he opened his eyes, and somehow or another, the rest was history. He had a child named Shakuntala from her, noted beauty from in the universe. And then he realized after 100 years of being with Shakuntala that I just spent 60,000 years meditating to become a Brahmin, and now I'm still not a Brahmin. I just have a little girl to maintain, that's all. So he decided to go back to meditation again. So another 60,000 years went by. He's still meditating, and in your thought, this time I'm going to send another officer. But no one wanted to go because they were afraid of the sage. And I guess there was no insurance at that time in the heavenly planets. There's no life insurance. Anyhow, he got one officer to go. And as soon as Vishwamrita heard her ankle bells, he was so angry that he opened his eyes, and from his eyes, fire shot out from his eyes and burnt the officer to ashes. Now he fell down due to anger. First it was lust, and then it was anger. But he went back to meditation for another 60,000 years. This time Indra couldn't convince any officer to go. And after 180,000 years, Brahma, Lord Brahma, came and gave him second initiation. Such a powerful personality, Vishistha Muni, who was able to have a Kamadhenu cow that could produce anything in unlimited quantities, still we find he was greedy to get more. So what to speak of ourselves? What do we have? But still, therefore, Krishna says, Trividam narakasyedam dvaram nashnam asana kama krodha tatalovas tasmat etam trayam tyajat. In this world, there are three gates to hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should give these up because they lead to degradation of the self. Etera vimukta kondiya Etera vimukta kontiya, yobhya ebhya vita. It's chapter 16. Chant. Hare Krishna. Yeah. Trivida narakasyedam. And then it's Etera vimukta kontiya. What's that? Tamo dvaras trivira nara acharat yet manashrayas tato yanti param gitim. Anyone who gives up these three gates to hell performs activities which are conducive to self-realization, and thus he attains the transcendental destination. So, how do you give up these three gates to hell? If a person as exalted as Vishistha Muni became greedy, then what to speak of ourselves? We have nothing. He had, because he was such an exalted personality, he was satisfied with practically just a cow and some ghee. But still, at times, he became greedy. So what to speak of ourselves? So then Krishna says, Yakshastra vidim utsrija vartate kamakarata asasadim avapnoti nasukam naparam gitim. That anyone who gives up yakshastra vidim ustrija, anyone who gives up the direction of the shastra, karma, and then acts whimsically, can obtain neither peace nor happiness nor the supreme destination. In other words, our only shelter is ultimately shastra. It is not that we read the Bhagavatam in this ninth canto. As I mentioned before, we can see that we have problems. And we may think if I go to the heavenly planets or these great sages, they don't have problems like I have because they're great sages. But we find out everyone practically in the universe has the same problems. Of course, their problems are more or less a little bit within their time. It's not that this is the whole life of Vishistha Muni, but very significant incidents from his life. He may live for millions of years. And he may have one or two problems. Like, for instance, here he's cursing his disciple Nimi, and he's becoming kind to curse. But this is not like an everyday occurrence in the life of a sage. You know, you go to the heavenly planets, He watches all the sages cursing all the time. You think, well, didn't their mother teach them how to talk politely? Why are this all this foul language from the sages? No, actually, it was unusual. These are unusual incidences, but they're more or less warnings to us that even when we go to the heavenly planets, we can't expect simply everyone's going to be completely in the mode of goodness. That unless we come to the transcendental platform, there's problems, even in Brahmaloka, what to speak of Vishishtamuni. Although these problems are much rarer than the problems we experience in everyday Kali Yuga. On the other hand, only by taking shelter of Shastra, and Shastra ultimately tells us, Tasma Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyastito Gyatva Shastram Vinanoktam Karma Kartam Iharasi. Once you know what's duty and what's not duty by the regulations of Shastra, and knowing such rules and regulations, which one should follow them so that one can gradually become elevated. So of course, Shastra says in this age, chant Hare Krishna. It doesn't say chant 16 rounds. It's Kirtan Yaksada Hari. Always chant Hare Krishna. That's practically the only thing we can do to keep ourselves aloof from the influence of Kali Yuga. Of course, we can try to follow some Vedic principles, and some are necessary, like the four regular principles, but ultimately it's only the Hare Krishna mantra that can save us in Kali Yuga. Even following four regular principles will not elevate us very much in Kali Yuga. Nor, without the chanting of the holy name, will it be possible to people to follow the four regular principles. We find that in a very short period of time, for instance, in India, even 100 years ago, it was just normal to follow regular principles. People, perhaps were not devotees, we're not even religious, but just normally they follow the religious principles. And now within the last 10 years, things have changed so much. I remember around 10 years ago, one Mataji, Parvati Devi Dasi, who you may know, a disciple of Prabhupada, her daughter was marrying the son of Sriji, one of the jewelers in Vrindavan. And they were invited everyone. I was there teaching a course at the VIHE. And they invited everyone, including the sannyasis, to go to the wedding. I didn't go. But in any case, the devotees who went, they said they all went in dhotis and saris. And when they got there, all the Indians that were there, all dressed in tuxedos and dresses, and they were playing rock music. This is the same Vrindavan where just maybe 40 years before, when the devotees first came, the residents of Vrindavan wouldn't even talk to them because they thought they were all malechas. And now, these same malechas, they're all dressed in a sari and dhoti, chanting Hare Krishna. And the same persons who were calling them malechas are now in tuxedos and dresses playing rock music. Or techno music, who knows? So this is just in a very brief period of time. And now we go to India, even Vrindavan. I remember one time Brajavihari Prabhu was telling me, I saw him in New York, he was in London. He was on the way with Gopinath to the Grand Canyon some years ago. They said, this is Kartik. Everyone else is trying to get to India, Vrindavan for Kartik. And Brajavihari Prabhu and Gopinath, they were going to the Grand Canyon for Kartik. So I said, why are you going to the Grand Canyon? Everyone else is going the other way. He said, well, Vrindavan has become such that especially during Kartik, there is so much bad association there. He said, in Vrindavan, you can go across the street, and for 50 rupees, you can buy a DVD, or I guess it's a DVD, maybe it's a CD, of pornography. So that's Vrindavan. That's the most holy place in the universe, and it's Kali Yuga. And we can see how things have so rapidly become degraded. We hear Prabhupada speaking about Vrindavan when he was giving lectures. He said, oh, Vrindavan is so wonderful, especially in 26 Second Avenue. He used to mention, oh, there's no cars there. There's no, taxis, and the air is so clean and everything's so fresh. Now you go to Vrindavan, I think they just widened the road. They knocked down part of our gate to make a highway to the most sacred part of Vrindavan, Loy Bazaar. And they've actually made a highway around Vrindavan, so you can't walk around Vrindavan anymore, you have to take a car. And I think they made some kind of something, they were trying to make something around Keshi Ghat. So you could drive around Keshi Ghat. In other words, Kali Yuga has become so degraded, even in the sacred places, what to speak of the rest of India. You can see in Bombay, all they're doing is trying to build these highways. For years and years, they're trying to build highways. And the more they build highways, the more they have cars. So it gets a little quicker, but it's just such, even if it's a little quicker to go from our temple in Juhu or in Chopati to go to the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. But the whole atmosphere is so contaminated with exhaust that you probably, you may not survive going to the hospital. And this is all in the name of progress. So what to speak of? Well, here we have the sages and the heavenly planets, and they have problems, and we have problems too here. So how to solve the problems? Well, we have to chant Hare Krishna. We have to become convinced to follow these principles. And following the principles are simply an opportunity to help us understand how to get or experience the full benefit of chanting. Making the atmosphere spiritual and at the same time chanting Hare Krishna. But not to expect that if everything doesn't work out, that at least I'm going to the heavenly planets. So it's not, even if I'm not so serious about Krishna consciousness, everything will be all right because I'll go to the heavenly planets and have a good time there. Well, that's not a very good idea because we may not have such a good time in the heavenly planets. And even if we do have a good time in the heavenly planets, when we come back here, Lord Chaitanya's movement may be over. And we may not get that same opportunity for many, many lifetimes of Brahma again. Therefore, we shouldn't be so much confident that I have such a long life that I don't really have to worry about my future. And even if I don't make it in this lifetime, that at least I'm coming back again as a devotee or I'm going to the heavenly planets and there everything will be all right. Maybe I'll have my own Kamudenu cow and I won't have to cook. I just tell him, from your udder, manifest pizza with olives and asparagus. And a little salad, too, to keep myself healthy. No, we may have that opportunity to enjoy in the heavenly planets, but that's not going to get us out of the material world. And the material world is a dangerous place. We may enjoy it one moment. We may have the greatest priest in the universe. We may have a body that's going to last for a long time. But in a moment, Nimi was cursed and he left his body. Vashishtha Muni, the most popular priest in the whole universe, that Indra is trying to get him to do sacrifices, he gets cursed and he leaves his body. Of course, they're not ordinary persons, so it's not the end of the story. You'll have to come back tomorrow to find out what the end of the story is. So, we're going to stop there. Any questions? Yes.
Maharshi, I was wondering, in the heavenly planets, since the bodies don't deteriorate, how do they die? And also, people in heaven, do they have a chance to go back home, back to Godhead, because Narada Muni is preaching there? And do people actually make it out of there, going back to Godhead? Or do they have to just always come down?
Well, how do they die? Just like everyone else dies. The soul leaves the body. Well, the karma runs out. I mean, although we may say everything works by karma, but ultimately the reason why the soul leaves the body is that Krishna takes the soul out of the body. Old age? Well, somehow or another, the body just has a certain destiny, a certain time it works, and then it stops working. So at a certain time, according to the laws of karma, in other words, one is given a body with a certain duration according to one's past activities, and at a certain time, it doesn't work anymore. That's just the way it is. Now, it's not that they go through old age. They don't. But that's how it is. They just leave their bodies. Not usually, because they don't really perform. They perform devotional activities, but not so seriously. Their aim in their devotional activities is not to go back to Godhead. Just like if you're enjoying some movie and you're eating popcorn, everything seems all right. Usually you're watching the movie, your aim is not to go back to Godhead. You're not thinking, watching, enjoying the movie, eating the popcorn, I want to go back to Godhead. No, if anything, it may even be your desire is not very strong. So, they're more or less watching another movie, a good movie. Krishna is there in the movie sometimes. But they're not really thinking about going back to Godhead. They're just enjoying the movie. So at the end, they don't go back to Godhead. If they're fortunate, then they take birth in Bharadvarsha and do some devotional activities here. Or another, in the fifth canto, we have all the different varshas where sometimes the demigods appear after leaving their heavenly planets, where they live for 10,000 years sometimes, 1,000 years, and they enjoy there for a while. But their spirit is enjoying. But also in the heavenly planets, we find sages. And they perform pious activities, and they get elevated to still higher planets. Until they get to Brahmaloka, and from Brahmaloka, sometimes if they actually become serious, then they go back with Brahma to the spiritual world. But here we find that most of the sages are all engaged in fruitive activities. And there's not much mention about Janaloka and Siddhaloka. There they're engaged in meditation, not so much fruitive activities. So they have a better chance of going up to Brahmaloka and from there going back to the spiritual world.
So when Narada Muni was preaching to the Haryasvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, and they were all liberated because of his preaching, he doesn't preach in the heavenly planets and liberate people? Like, where does
Narada usually
Muni go?
We don't find Narada going to Indra and saying, you're in Maya, why you engage in so much sense gratification? We never, in the Bhagavatam, we have Narada Muni preaching to different people, but not to Indra or the devotees of Maharloka. Because they're engaged in pious activities. He leaves them alone. Usually to other people he preaches.
So the Haryasvas, well, that was a very rare instance? The sons of Prajapati Daksha, that was very rare?
But engaged in meditation, whatever?
They were engaged in meditation because their father wanted them to become grihastas. And instead of becoming grihastas, they decided to just prepare to go back home, back to Godhead, because
they were engaged in austerities. And therefore, Narada Muni saw they were qualified to hear his message, though because of the austerities, not because of their sons of Prajapati Daksha. They had become purified enough. But Indra is not engaged in those kind of austerities. So Narada Muni doesn't approach people who are not prepared to undergo the austerity. And we can see that when you approach Prajapati Daksha, he was not very receptive because he didn't go, although he went through austerity, and he thought now is the time when he lost his sons, maybe he'd be a little renounced, but he wasn't. Instead, he cursed Narada Muni. Anything else?
Maharaj, I have a question. Like you were just talking about Vrindavan becoming so contaminated.
Yeah.
I mean, we do plan to go back to Mayapur shortly. We plan maybe in a 5 years' time. So if the pilgrimages or these dhams get so contaminated, is our decision that in future we have to go and settle there? Is it okay, or you think wherever we are, we should stay there and practice Krishna consciousness?
Well, I heard that in Kali Yuga, the only dham that will be left, practically speaking, is Mayapur dham. But our mission in general is to preach Krishna consciousness. Living in the holy dham is really meant for persons who are retiring and trying to, from there, like vanaprasthas, absorb their consciousness in Krishna, therefore go back to the spiritual world. It's not really meant for householders to live there. It's meant for renunciates.
Get in the dham.
On the other hand, nowadays, so many people from Delhi have built houses there. That's why they had to widen the road. They built these elaborate houses. And we even built the MBT there, which is, we have everything, you know, it's not exactly what Prabhupada wanted. He really wanted Vrindavan to be a place for renunciation, to meditate on Krishna. Of course, Mayapur is a little bit Adaryadam, a little bit more merciful. And therefore, if you go there, it's not so contaminated. And in one sense, because it's very hard. I mean, first of all, to have a road that can even get to Mayapur is rather difficult. By the mercy of the Japanese, because they had factories and near Vrindavan, they built all these roads, so it became easier to get to Vrindavan, which wasn't to Vrindavan's advantage. So Mayapur is still, to go whatever kilometers is it take, you never know how long it's going to take. So that's to its advantage. Anything else? Is that what I said is all right, Nanda Vrindavan? Yes.
One more question.
Yes.
Prabhupada was a person that he wanted all his disciples to go at least yearly to India, Mayapur and Vrindavan specifically. But now so many changes. Does the devotees still receive the spiritual benefit of going to those places, even though things has changed so much, like you explained?
Well, I mean, all they could do is cover. It said in the Bhaktivinoda Thakura has explained that there's something called a covering over Vrindavan, a Maya covering. But it can't really cover Vrindavan. I mean, it's not that Krishna has fallen to Maya in Vrindavan. Although, one time, someone decided in Radha and Bhakti Bihari temple, which is probably the most popular temple, to put sunglasses and a mobile phone in the deity's hand. So it came to that point. Of course, I think they got rid of that pujari, hopefully. But it's not that Krishna has been covered over or the dham has become any less holy. It's just that if you're going there with the intention of enjoying, then you may not be able to appreciate what actually is the holy dham. Just like, for instance, everywhere in the dham, practically speaking, this is some place where Krishna had his pastimes. So if one is going there and constantly hearing about Krishna's pastimes and associating with that dham in that way, then one is actually in the holy dham. If you go to Vrindavan, I remember I used to do parikram around every day around the Goshala, and we passed by, and right next to the Goshala were these sadhus, very nice sadhus, but their business was Mostly they were cultivating marijuana plants. And they weren't the only ones in the Dham that were cultivating marijuana. And that's what their business was. That was their meditation, growing the plants and smoking them. Maybe they had other meditations, but that was the most obvious one. But it's not that they were living in one sense, their consciousness was not in the Dham, therefore they were not really in the Dham. But that doesn't mean where they were wasn't really the holy Dham. They just weren't in the Dham. So if we go there for the idea of actually putting our consciousness in Krishna and appreciating this is where Krishna wrote, you know, cracked the orb, overturned the mortar, and the mortar went through the two Arjun trees, and this is where the trees fell down, and this is the mortar. Or we go to the holy Dham with that idea. This is Keshi God, where Krishna fought against the Keshi demon or Kaliya God. Then we'll be in Krishna consciousness, and everywhere we'll look will remind us of Krishna. And the Dham also has a potency, but that potency can be covered over if we, by at least to the people who are in material consciousness. To them, it's a material Dham. It's material. But for a devotee, it's just as powerful spiritually. But it depends on our consciousness. The difficulty is that for neophyte devotees, which includes practically all of us, when we go there and we see all these distractions, we get distracted. As Brajavi Bihari Prabhu told me, you can go downtown to Lower Bazaar, and even before the movies come out in the West, you can buy the latest movies there, including Avatar, I guess. So, I mean, in one sense, it's quite extraordinary. But if you don't go to Vrindavan for that reason, because you find out that they have the latest movies there, you're going there to remember Krishna, then you'll be in spiritual consciousness. Yes.
Maharaj, I was wondering in this pastime that Maharaj Nimi, he had a very noble reason for wanting to do the sacrifice.
What was that noble reason?
Well, the noble reason was that he felt that life was very short and that at any moment one can die, but if you do something worthy, then That is a good reason.
Yeah. Because it doesn't really mention what his reason for doing the sacrifice, other than the fact he wanted to do it very quickly, because whatever the sacrifice was going to bring him, he should get immediately.
So in this situation, the priests and the spiritual masters, they didn't have like shiksha gurus that they could consult and everyone work together?
Well, even if they did, I mean, these are extraordinary circumstances. Like Ambarish Maharaj, here's Durvasa Muni coming with his 60,000 sages, and Ambarish is fasting because of Ekadasi, Niljal. And then he says, all right, just go take your shower and we'll have all the prasadam ready. In the meantime, Durvasa Muni, in the back of his mind, he's envious of Ambarish, and therefore when Ambarish has to break, he purposely stays away, and then the sages, his Brahmins, who he's consulting with, say, well, take a little water, because it doesn't break the fast, and at the same time, it breaks the fast. So he does it, but does Durvasa Muni think, well, all the sages said it was all right, all these Brahmanas, so I guess it was all right. No, because his intention was, he was envious, therefore he found an excuse to curse Ambarish, or even to try to kill him. So if your mentality is crooked, doesn't matter how many consultants you have, if the person who's envious of you wants to get you, they'll find some excuse for it. Just like Ramachandra Khan, he was looking for an excuse to criticize Lord Chaitanya. And he couldn't find one. He observed him, you know, day and night, trying to figure out what is he eating, how is he sleeping, everything. Imagine having the opportunity to associate with personally with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spending your whole time trying to figure out what's wrong with him. I mean, what kind of mentality is that? How unfortunate he was. And he couldn't find anything wrong, so one day he comes early in the morning to Lord Chaitanya's house, his Bhajan Kutir. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been to his Bhajan Kutir in Jagannath Puri? Gundicha? Oh, not Gundicha. What is it? Gambira. I mean, it's really austere in there. I mean, it's not exactly a luxury apartment. And Lord Chaitanya is doing a lot better here in Dallas, and is on the altar here. It's quite austere, but he walks into the Gambira and he sees some ants crawling. And he says, aha, now I understand. Secretly at night, this sannyasi, he's eating sweetmeats, which is spoiling his renunciation. Oh, he's not a sannyasi, and he walks out. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a little bewildered, not bewildered, but he's thinking, I heard that this person's a little critical, but now I can understand. Simply imagine something, because ants are everywhere in India. But somehow or another, he was looking for some fault, and therefore he imagined faults. So if you want to, doesn't matter how many persons are consulting or you're consulting with, if someone wants to find fault with you, they'll find some reason to find fault. They even found fault as one devotee went to Prabhupada and was lamenting, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, everyone's criticizing me. And Prabhupada said, well, they criticized Lord Chaitanya. So the devotee thought, well, Prabhupada didn't hear me. So he said, Prabhupada, that you don't understand. Everyone's just criticizing me all the time. So Prabhupada said, they criticized Lord Chaitanya. So what to speak of you? They criticized Krishna. So if people want to criticize, they'll find some reason to criticize anyone. Even God, they'll find some reason to criticize. Even if there's no reason to criticize. Anything else? Thank you very much. Krantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.